Good evening and welcome everyone to the November 7th City Council meeting, Astoria, Oregon. Call to order, let's see, Chief Johnston.
Councilor Nemelo.
Here.
Councilor Bryce.
Here.
Councilor Ward.
Here.
Mayor LaMire.
Here. Thank you. Reports of councilors. Councilor Ward.
No report.
Okay. Councilor Price.
Good evening, everyone. Mr. City Manager, we talked about this last week. I'm not sure you're prepared for this, but does maybe Chief Johnston want to talk to us about BHO? It seems like a long time now, that explosion, but it did happen between now and the last time. And I get a lot of questions about what the heck happened, if there's any update that we can give. And particularly, if any of the pot shops that are in downtown or maybe going into downtown, do they engage in similar activities?
So, Chief, if you can you chat a little bit about BHO, maybe come to the lectern. While Chief Johnson's coming up, now this is referring to the explosion which happened at a marijuana production facility in West Astoria a few weeks ago. And while Chief Johnston is getting some notes put together, it looks like, for
when a meeting is
for the this discussion, I will talk maybe a little about some of the zoning issues associated with some of the other facilities. In our downtown core, there are no production facilities presently, nor are there any that have filed as of yet. I will say that if there was a manufacturer facility proposed for the downtown core, this would require a conditional use permit to go before the Planning Commission, which had which would have the ability to have public notice and comment on the issues. I'll say that, you know, with regards to this whole issue of marijuana manufacturing, there's a whole new set of things that are coming about with regards to what is included in a grow facility versus a production facility where BHO is manufactured. And Chief, I'll let you talk a little bit about the whole what is BHO in the first place and what is ongoing with that.
So BHO is a method for extracting THC at a high level of concentrate from the plant product. It is we have seen in Oregon many cases of home production that have resulted in some fairly spectacular explosions and fires. I'm not aware of any other commercial operation that this has happened in. And I do want to say that I want to be very careful about what I'm saying, because this is something that is ongoing. And there have been some comments already in the media that have hampered the investigation by the fire department and made it difficult for them to interact with some of the parties that are involved. So I don't want to speak too much about the details of this particular incident. Just kind of give you a high-level overview of where we're at. Parties that are involved in this, which will include some of the regulatory agencies, the investigatory agencies, the firefighters, are all going to be meeting day after tomorrow to kind of huddle and figure out where we're at on this and what the path is to move forward. As I said, there's been a fair amount of difficulty in getting people to talk about what was going on, and I think some of that is due to fear of prosecution, which has kind of chilled things a little bit. And it is safe to say that the regulatory picture is not clear as we transition from the Oregon Health Authority to OLCC. Some of the indications we've gotten even from Oregon Health Authority is that they were unclear on some of the advice that they had received from Department of Justice that may have led to them giving out information that they are now uncertain of to their applicants. So It is a fairly sensitive area that we're working on this particular issue. The BHO process is difficult. I know I saw on your Facebook page a chemist who was saying there's just some standard precautions that need to be taken in things like this, and that sounds right to me. You know, these kind of things are not unknown in commercial operations, but are fairly new to this particular variety of commercial operation.
Okay, thank you. I'm very sorry to hear that a couple of people were injured. One is still in a burn ward, and but amongst my constituents and certainly downtown, there was concern. Do we even have the ability to ask or to know, you know, what is associated with these other operations? And I think you've answered that.
So the only place we actually get input in the licensing process for OLCC is the planning arena. The Community Development Department gets a request to determine that this is a property that meets the zoning. And that is the city's only opportunity to comment. It's not like a liquor license where we get to investigate the people that are applying or the location that it's going in at. The zoning laws really are our only opportunity to actually comment on these.
Okay, but so far there are no grow ops downtown.
Not any downtown.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is that the end of yours?
Yes.
Okay. Councillor Nemlowell.
No reports, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. I very much enjoyed the candidates forum that was put on by AAUW, the American Association of University Women. I think all three of the candidates that we have for city council are excellent candidates. It was great to hear them. They had all had a lot of poise. They answered the questions completely, and I'm excited about what's happening. So I'd like to recognize two of the candidates that are here. I don't believe Corey Peterson is here, but Bruce Jones and Tom Brownson are two of our candidates. Raise your hands so everybody knows you. And we're excited to see the results. I also had a very interesting experience. I was asked to talk to a group of Cub Scouts about what it was like to be mayor and also what was my role in the budget. They wanted me to explain the budget. And so I took in this thing that, you know, our budget is about this thick and lots of pages of numbers, and I thought, my gosh, it's hard enough to explain to a 70-year-old what a budget is, but a 7-year-old, it was really intriguing. But they asked some pretty good questions, so I was impressed, and they actually sat through my whole explanation, so that was good. Nobody went to sleep. So that was an interesting evening, and I think that's all of my report. Changes to the agenda?
No changes.
Okay. Consent calendar. This is a group of items that we vote on just with one vote unless someone has asked for an item to be removed, and I understand that item F has been requested by
Councillor Price. Councillor Price requested that item 5F be removed.
Okay. Anyone else on the council want to remove an item? Okay. Could we have a motion to approve items 5A through E?
So moved.
Second.
Chief Ames?
Councillor
Nemlowell. Aye.
Councillor Price?
Aye.
Councillor Ward?
Aye.
Mayor
Rubin? Aye. Thank you. Memorandum of Understanding for Indigent Defense Services. It's a mouthful.
Thank you. Yes, and I don't know if the city manager wants to say what this is instead of me.
Sure. So this is a program that through our municipal court, which provides suitable legal counsel for an indigent defendant when requirements are met by Oregon revised statutes. So it's providing that counselor, legal counselor, when they are unable to afford that. And we provide those services through a memorandum of understanding with an attorney by the name of Jerry Wadowski. Our municipal court judge, Chris Kino, has proposed an adjustment of the Indigent Defense Service Memorandum of Understanding to reflect the current and anticipated caseloads, which are anticipated to become fewer over time. Our municipal court judge, Kino, was not able to be here tonight, but our finance director, Susan Brooks, will be able to answer any questions with regards to numbers of cases, those types of things, and that her staff or the staff which actually do the case management when before or after a trial occurs. So the MOU is being brought to you tonight for consideration, and Susan will be able to answer any of those questions.
Right, and this may well be the way to go. In July or August, some of you may remember the, I believe it was Chief Johnston came to us in the council. Anyway, last year, all DUIs started going to criminal to circuit court, and now over time, all criminal charges in Astoria are going to circuit court. And I believe from Ms. Brooks's emails to me earlier today, nothing has gone in since August. No new cases have come, right? Because they are all going to circuit court, as far as I know. But there will be some pending cases. So this new contract would rather be rather than being on a monthly basis, would be a defendant basis. And I understand there are some pending cases that may or may not come up. Anyway, I wanted to just check with Chris Kino, the city prosecutor, about, you know, how many of these pending warrants are there. You know, we could be in a situation where for some really indefinite period, we are, you know, paying both for Indigent Defense Counsel, for extra work at the city prosecutor, and for the county. And at some point, we may just want to say enough and just send all of these pending cases over to circuit court, which is a possibility, and then we would have no need for Indigent Defense Counsel, although I'm told that he's a very good attorney, and so it has nothing to do with his qualifications. It is simply, you know, is it a smart thing for us to do? So anyway, I would just like to ask Chris Kino a couple of questions and clarify, and I may ask if we can consider this again next week. Meanwhile, tonight I would just simply abstain. Right. So how do you know, and then how does that work? Do we just wait for them maybe to show up? So, you know, maybe just ship them off all to circuit court, or we'll be having a contract for years? I don't know.
And I'm not sure if that's, Johnson could tell me once we've issued the warrant.
The process for moving things between the courts was at best difficult when we started moving pending DUIs over there at one point. And I think what the right course of action probably is that at some point these warrants are stale. It will be within probably 3 years, and the judge will start dismissing them if they don't actually, there's been no attempt to serve them, or there's been no service on them. So probably it will start to reduce itself annually over the next 3 years.
So there is a limit. There is a limit. You don't leave them outstanding forever.
Your husband will know this better than I. But there is.
Yeah, but I don't ask him.
There is some case law out there that says that if there's not an active attempt to serve these warrants, the statute of limitations. And on many of these, we don't have good addresses for people. They live outside the county, and the county is, the warrant is within the county only. So there is no attempt to actually serve those. And those will go stale at some point and start to herds themselves.
Okay, well, that's good news and interesting news. And so on that basis, I do think that the defendant basis is the way to go. And so I could vote yes on this. Thank you.
Okay. Could I clarify then, the reason that these warrants are sitting there is because you have no addresses for these folks? Is that correct?
There are incidents where someone has failed to appear on their warrant, on their case, or lost contact with their attorney if they're represented, and the court issues warrants. I guess the other way that they come out is someone's failing to comply with the terms of their probation or their diversion, and then a warrant would be issued. So that's when they get issued. They usually fall out because there are people that we just don't know who they are. They're not people that we talk to regularly. They're not people that live in the county, and they don't end up being contacted by law enforcement.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Could we have a motion then to approve item 5F?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Okay, we now go into our regular agenda items, and the public has the right to speak on any of these items if you just raise your hand after the council has had an opportunity to talk about them. But we would ask that you just speak for 3 minutes. The first item is a public hearing and ordinance. It's a long title. I'll let you read it.
This is a public hearing and ordinance considering the First Amendment to the Astor West Urban Renewal Plan, expanding the boundary to include Bond Street and adjacent properties, add projects, and to update the urban renewal plan. So tonight, the Astoria City Council is being asked to hold a public hearing to gain input regarding the consideration and potential adoption of the proposed Astor West Urban Renewal Plan First Amendment. Tonight, our urban renewal consultant, Elaine Howard, is here. And rather than me going into a lot of detail on this matter, I'm going to ask Elaine to provide some additional detail in terms of what is being brought before you tonight. But in summary, this is the process that the council has been moving and the Astoria Development Commission have been moving forward to include areas to add the Bond Street slide into the Astor West urban renewal area and potentially provide funding for a project to be able to open Bond Street to two-way traffic. There are also some other projects which are being added to this plan along the way and actually doing some, I'm going to call it some housekeeping matters along the way as well. So after Ms. Howard provides her report, it's recommended that the council conduct the public hearing and then, if in agreement, hold the first reading of the ordinance. So, Elaine?
So this amendment is a substantial amendment to the Astor West Urban Renewal Area. The Urban Renewal Plan was adopted in 2002, so it's 14 years old. So one of the things that was accomplished through this amendment was refreshing the Urban Renewal Plan, so looking at portions of it that needed to be updated to current status. City Manager Estes says, it's to expand to include the Bond Street area and reopen it to two-way traffic, to improve housing through community-based partnerships, to rethink your Uniontown investment strategy over the next 5 years, and to align the urban renewal plan with other city strategies, Advance Astoria and Uniontown Reborn Initiative. The property that's being added is 12.05 acres, and that's what makes it a substantial amendment. Anytime you add property over 1% of your existing urban renewal area, it has to be a substantial amendment to the urban renewal plan. That's defined by statute as the same process and procedure as adopting a new plan. So you have to go through All of your details, you have to establish your blight findings again, and you have to look at the conformance to your comprehensive plan again. This includes 43 tax lots, and you can see the property shaded there in green. The projects that are being added are the Bond Street Improvement and Retaining Wall with an estimated cost of $400,000. A redevelopment assistance fund to include affordable housing of about $209,000. A storefront improvement program. That program was actually drafted, and this helps provide the funding for it, and that's $265,000. And then a redevelopment assistance program that's about $2.5 million, and that can be used for any redevelopment types of activities in the area. So you could use that for housing redevelopment. You could use that for other types of redevelopment activities. I think it's anticipated to be used in partnership with private enterprises within the area. There are also existing projects within the urban renewal plan. The West Marine Drive Streetscape project is a project that is existing that will stay in the plan and be implemented, and then some Port of Astoria related investments. And again, the Uniontown Reborn Initiative, there's a $188,000 of TGM grant, and there's Streetscape and Gateway Design. And if you have any questions about those projects, Kevin's standing here, and he could go through that. So we'll pause here for a minute to see if Council has any questions on any of those.
And Council, if I would, I just want to make sure there's clarification. Elaine, could you also talk about, I believe there was a removal of a project as well, which was the convention center item as well. And so that's proposed as part of this. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. Because that convention center is no longer a project that's being discussed, we went ahead and removed that and the associated funding from the plan. So all of these projects are within the maximum indebtedness that already exists for the urban renewal plan. So the amendment does not propose to add any new maximum indebtedness. It just rearranges where that money might go.
I always love acronyms. What is TGM?
It's Transportation Growth Management. That's we received a transportation, or we will be receiving a Transportation Growth Management grant for the, I'm going to call it the Streetscape project, which is one of the City Council goals, the Gateway Enhancements. Good. And the State of Oregon Transportation Growth Management Program has notified us that we've received it. We just haven't received the contract as of date, and that will be brought to Council, we're hoping, in the next few months.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Any other project questions? So the other thing that we did was update the goals and objectives and relationships to the local objectives of the Urban Renewal Plan, because since the adoption of the in 2002, you had new comprehensive plan goals adopted. So we went in and updated those to conform to the projects and the objectives of your urban renewal plan. The Planning Commission reviewed those at their last meeting and voted unanimously that the urban renewal plan amendment did conform to the comprehensive plan. So we go over this. I know you as mayor and city council don't need this, but since it is a public hearing, we do go over what tax increment is and how urban renewal works so that anybody in the audience can understand. So when an urban renewal area is formed, the assessor establishes what's called a frozen base of the assessed value within the urban renewal area. That's shown in gray along the bottom. Taxes off of that assessed value continue going to all of the different taxing jurisdictions, so the city, the county, the school district. Any increase in value within that urban renewal area, the taxes off of that increase in value goes to the urban renewal agency to do projects within the urban renewal area. And that continues going until the urban renewal area is projected to end. And then the hope of urban renewal is you're able to raise the assessed values within that urban renewal area, and all taxing jurisdictions benefit from that at the end of urban renewal. The caveat for schools is schools are not directly impacted by urban renewal. They're indirectly impacted, which means that there is less money that goes to the state school fund. It is the state school fund that funds Astoria Schools and the Education Service District, and that's allocated on a per pupil basis by the legislature when they meet. So it's not a direct deficit from them, and usually there is a very nominal impact to the schools because the legislature backfills loss of monies to the state school fund from urban renewal. That doesn't mean that always will happen. That's something the legislature decides when they meet. The impacts to taxing districts is something that's required to be talked about in a substantial amendment. Since there is no increase to the maximum indebtedness, the overall impact to the taxing districts is, you can think about it as virtually nothing, because the maximum indebtedness of $9,119,000 doesn't change. So that impact is going to be constant. What does change is, because you're adding new property to the urban renewal area, the increase in value of that new property will cause an annual impact to the taxing jurisdiction, so that they'll be giving a little bit more money from 2018 to 2020 to the urban renewal agency. But in 2021, when the area is expected to reach its maximum indebtedness, they'll give a little less money because they gave a little more money the earlier years. So it all ends up to the same $9,119,000. It's just allocated a little different over the couple of years. Maximum indebtedness, again, is the total amount of money that the city may spend through the Urban Renewal Agency on projects, programs, and administration in the urban renewal area. The impact to the city of Astoria is shown here, and this is one of the larger impacts to the taxing districts, because you have the others are countywide impacts, so it's a smaller percentage and a smaller amount. So your impact overall ends up being, in year 2021, a positive impact of $13,000, and that's because it's a negative impact those 3 years prior, where you're paying a little bit more to urban renewal than if these properties were not added to the amendment area. The timeline has been, in July there was the first open house. In August, the Astoria Development Commission reviewed and updated the project list. In September, there were notice to the property owners in their utility bills. On October 3rd, you had the Urban Renewal Agency, your Astoria Development Commission, review this. The next day, those formal notices were sent to the taxing jurisdictions, and they were told to, if they wanted to respond in writing. And so far, we haven't received any responses from any of the taxing jurisdictions. There was an open house on October 25th before the Planning Commission meeting, and a number of people came and asked questions just about, mostly about the Bond Street reopening and what that would mean in terms of, it was property owners or people who lived in that direct neighborhood who were interested in where there might be sidewalks and what the traffic calming might be within that area. There was the Planning Commission meeting where there was the unanimous motion to approve this and to recommend that the City Council approved the amendment. And then City Manager Estes and I presented it to the Clapsack County Commission on October 26th. They were just generally interested. They don't get to vote on this, but they were given a briefing, and they seemed supportive, and especially supportive of the potential housing investments within the area. Tonight is the first reading and the public hearing, and hopefully the first reading of the ordinance, and then at your next meeting on the 21st will be the second reading of the ordinance. It's a non-emergency ordinance, which means it doesn't go into effect for 30 days after passage. And that allows people who may decide that they want to oppose it to put together a referendum if they think that that's what they have to do. So that is my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Council, any questions, comments? Okay, the public, anybody want to ask a question?
Yes, you need to open the public hearing.
I will open the public hearing. Does anyone in the public like to speak to this issue? Okay, I actually have a couple of questions if nobody else does. this mentions widening Bond Street.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to address that, and also
is there any indication that this will actually add some affordable housing units, or are we just renovating what's already there?
Yeah, so let me answer the first question about Bond Street first. So currently we have a one-way street. It's roughly about, I don't know, Nathan, about 12 feet wide on a good day. If we open it with a retaining wall, we'll get 20 feet. So we'll actually have two lanes, passable lanes. It's still not going to be wide enough to meet a city standard, but it's be wide enough to allow two-way traffic. So we'll have better traffic circulation for emergency response, for transit, for school buses, and other folks who are trying to get across the city.
So is the only place it's going to be widened right there where the slide was?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. That retaining wall will essentially bump it back an additional 10 feet.
Mm-hmm. And Mayor, just to be able to clarify as well, there would still only be sidewalks on the north side of the street. This street section would not accommodate enough width to be able to get sidewalks on the south side of Bond Street.
And you had a second question about the affordable housing portion of the proposal. So what staff is asking for council to approve is the allocation to in order to allow me to go and figure out how that program is going to work. So I've had exploratory conversations with both Community Action Team as well as CCA about how that program looks. And so similar to the storefront program, I'm going to have to bring something back to you for you to actually approve. Mm-hmm. So once you do approve this amendment, then I can start finalizing what that program looks like. So it'll take me a few months to actually get down to brass tacks and bring something that I feel is going to be good for the city and good for the council.
Okay.
But yes, the idea is to preserve the existing housing there. There's not a lot of vacant land along Bond Street, so I don't see a lot of new construction opportunities, so it's mostly preserving the existing housing there, if that answers your question.
So one of the things, there was a question at the county commission meeting, and the question was dealing with affordable housing, and the property that one of the county commissioners asked about is actually not within this expansion area, but rather the property that the housing authority owns, which has it has tenants on the ground floor but not on the second and third floor. And the county commission asked, could urban renewal be used to be able to assist the housing authority with some rehabilitation of that project? And the answer is yes, and we've had conversations with the housing authority staff about that already.
Is that the yellow building?
Yes.
Yeah, Uniontown Apartments.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments? Okay, could we see?
I just want to ask a question. This packet, I had a lot of questions about the items in this packet this week, and unfortunately didn't really have time because the packet came on Friday and I had a busy weekend, didn't really get a chance to look very carefully until today, and I have not had a chance to read Ms. Howard's report, scanned over it very briefly. There are a number of tables, there's a lot of data in there. It looks really interesting. So is there a problem if I abstain tonight so that I can vote more diligently when it comes up again on the 21st?
So tonight is just whether or not to hold the first reading of the ordinance. So I guess if there was...
Doesn't that include, though, some having some information about the report and the documentation that comes with it? Yes? No?
Not really.
No?
First reading is a formal procedure, like posting a notice.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't apply to the board.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
And Mayor, we would also need to have the public hearing closed before we would move forward.
Okay, close the public hearing. Could we have a motion and a second for the first reading?
Well, Mayor, I would like to say I think that the reopening of Bond Street to two-way traffic is very important, not only from a livability standpoint, but also as an alternate route in emergencies or times of high congestion, expanding the urban renewal district boundaries to improve housing in Astoria is also an added benefit. So I certainly wholeheartedly would make a motion for a first reading of the ordinance tonight.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Ms. Brooks, could you read the title of the ordinance?
An ordinance making certain determinations and findings relating to and approving the First Amendment to the Astor West Urban Renewal Plan.
Okay, thank you very much. Item B is a resolution amending the fee schedule for the Astoria Aquatic Center.
So Angela Cosby, our Parks Director, is coming up, and I'm going to give an intro to this agenda item. So the Aquatic Center works with the Astoria School District and the North Coast Swim Club to provide space within the lap pool for their youth swim team members to practice. And the current lane rentals included within the City of Astoria's fee schedule are $25 per lane per hour. However, with daily practices lasting several hours, neither the Astoria School District nor the North Coast Swim Club can afford the $25 per hour rate. It's suggested that in addition to our current $25 per lane per hour rental fee, there be an additional reduced rate of $5 per lane per hour. It's proposed that this additional rate be effective November 8th and that the youth swim team lane rental be contingent upon the rented space being used by youth swim teams for the purpose of practicing and that all participants purchase a monthly or daily pass. Following this increase, it's proposed that the fee be increased to $10 per lane per hour effective November 1st, 2017. Now, I'm going to ask Angela to provide a bit more detail with regards to this request. I know that there are some folks in the audience who would like to address the council, but I just want to make sure that all of the detail has been provided to the public and to the council.
Thank you. So in looking at our past practice to learn why we're here today, the North Coast Swim Club, as well as the Astoria High School swim teams, had both had agreements made with previous administration of the Parks and Recreation Department, that agreements that were not brought to forward to City Council, and that didn't comply with our fee resolution. So I feel it pertinent, being the Parks and Recreation Director and that being identified, to be able to bring it forward to have the problem remedied. So to correct this, staff started working with both swim teams to resolve, essentially to make the corrections of, to comply with the fee resolution, the master plan, and our adopted budget. And our, as Brett mentioned, the current fee resolution is $25 per lane per hour, but with the very high use for both swim teams, it simply isn't financially possible. In negotiating with the two swim teams, an original rate of $10 per lane per hour was negotiated with the Astoria High School swim team and agreed upon. When that same fee of $10 per lane per hour was brought forward to the North Coast Swim Club, there were concerns expressed that it just wouldn't be possible. So hearing that, staff reduced to $5 per lane per hour, since this would be a new fee that the North Coast Swim Club is not used to paying in the past, to give them time to adjust and to comply and being able to grow their swim team and make needed adjustments. So the proposal was $5 per lane per hour for the first year, and then next November increasing to the $10 per lane per hour. As a comparison, the Sunset Empire Parks and Recreation District down in Seaside charges $15 per lane per hour. They do have a different fee structure where they do not require their swim team members to hold a pass. Doing the math, the swim teams would need to have nearly 30 participants for them to be more cost effective to go to $15 per hour than our $5 per hour rate. And staff also feels it helps with operational efficiencies when swim team members have this pass. There is also an option for scholarships. If the swimmers are low income and City of Astoria residents, that monthly or daily pass can be subsidized that way. And overall, it's staff's goal to implement an adopted fee resolution and schedule while making it affordable for all the kids to swim. I'm happy to answer any questions before we hear from the audience.
Okay, questions from the council.
Would foundation scholarship money be eligible for lane rentals for a nonprofit such as North Coast Swim Club?
Great question. Not in our current policy. It is not written that way now.
Could it potentially be changed?
That is up for City Council's decision, yes.
Well, I would say that the foundation has a separate board, which determines how their funds are used, not the City of Astoria. You may want to...
Correct. It's also a City of Astoria policy as well, so it would have to be worked out with both groups.
Right. So the foundation itself is not controlled by the City of Astoria, but it's rather by the Parks Foundation Board of Directors. So if they were to provide scholarships for lane rentals, that foundation's board would need to vote on that.
Okay. And can you explain why it's necessary for these swim clubs to rent lanes? Because, I mean, theoretically, if they've got aquatic center passes, mm-hmm. they could just go in and use a lane or two, right? So why do they have to rent lanes?
Right. For users of the Aquatic Center, when you come in after 5 p.m., there is definite notice when swim teams are in the building and practicing, especially when both North Coast Swim Club and Astoria High School are both operating in the swim season. A large amount of the pool, half of the lap pool, is taken up by those groups. And it's felt as though the reservation fee, like we charge for many other reservations, is applicable. Does that answer your question?
Sure. And do you feel that the $5 introductory rate that you're proposing is, you know, I realize that might be more than these groups can pay or are willing to pay, but from your perspective, is it enough to cover costs?
It is not enough to cover costs, no. It is, the Aquatic Center operates on a subsidy, so it's a start in trying to stick with the same subsidy we have. If that we're not a for-profit business that can cover all of its costs, all of it is trying to manage a reasonable subsidy. I think the $5 per lane per hour is a step in the right direction to a reasonable subsidy.
Okay, and you mentioned your proposal and how it kind of brings into compliance the fee resolution, the budget, and the Parks Master Plan. Can you talk about how this relates to the Parks Master Plan?
Sure. The Parks Master Plan focuses on a few things, partnerships, but then also on revenue generation and what that looks like for all the different parties and the users of the Astoria Park system.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other comments or questions from the council?
Okay, I know that there are a lot of you out there wanting to speak. Okay, Patrick, you want to start? And when you come up to speak, please give your name and your address.
Hi, good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Patrick Wingard. I reside at 92015 Hagen Drive in Astoria. Good evening. I have the privilege of being the president of the North Coast Swim Club. You will see in the one-page handout that I just provided to you that the North Coast Swim Club, or NCSC, has been a member of the Astoria community for over 40 years. In the handout, I offer a snapshot of NCSC's fiscal year 2016 revenue projections. Monthly club dues represent the largest source of revenue for the club. Additional revenue generated through generous corporate sponsorships, our member fundraising obligation, and our annual Dolphin Splash fundraiser represent our next highest source of revenue for the club. You can see that we have a modest budget. We expect revenues to balance expenses this year. Further down the page, you will see a cost overview for a typical NCSC swimmer. Swimming is an expensive sport. There are no two ways around that. We recognize that maintaining an aquatic center is expensive, and that's probably an understatement. It behooves us as a club to generate as much revenue as possible for the city of Astoria, and we always expect to pay our fair share. Staff's proposed $5 to $10 an hour per lane charge certainly sounds reasonable, especially when one considers that NCSC has not been paying an hourly rate for its daily lane usage. To anyone that may be unfamiliar with a competitive swim club, it seems a no-brainer that we should pay for our lane space. We get that. However, we ask you, our elected officials, to consider the ramifications and unintended consequences of imposing an hourly lane usage fee for our community's swim club. Through purchase of monthly swim passes for our swimmers, as well as facility rentals for two home swim meets and our fundraiser, the Dolphin Splash, the North Coast Swim Club provides a $14,000 guaranteed annual revenue stream for the city of Astoria. $14,000. When Director Cosby informed club officials 6 days ago that city staff would be recommending to City Council the immediate imposition of a $5 an hour per lane usage fee to increase to $10 in 1 year, we were shocked. A $5 fee would represent a $9,000 annual cost to the club. A $10 fee would be $18,000. Our single largest budgeted line item is $14,750 for our head coach. Based on budget actuals through October, total club expenses for fiscal year 2016 project to $30,000. With respect, the immediate imposition of a 30% increase to club expenses, followed by a 60% increase to club expenses next year, is unreasonable. At the bottom of the one-page handout, you will see a monthly cost comparison for NCSC versus swimmers from three other USA swimming sanctioned swim clubs in the state, North Bend, Medford, and Newport. The table shows that NCSC swimmers currently pay more in dues, facility fees, and or lane usage fees than our competitors in these three cities. In my research, I was unable to find a club that paid member dues, a monthly or seasonal facility fee, and a lane usage fee, all three, like city staff are proposing for NCSC. I'm sure these clubs exist, clubs that have to pay all three, expectedly in larger, more affluent metropolitan areas in the state is my guess. But given the limited time that we had to pull together our research and try to have a coherent presentation for you tonight, this is the best we could do. But we picked clubs from smaller cities, so especially Newport, we think is spot on because they're building a new facility. And when speaking to the Aquatic Center manager and the Public Works Director, Tim Gross, who oversees the Parks Department, they used Astoria's Aquatic Center as one of their models. So I would ask you to take a look at those numbers. The city should know that staff's recommendation, if implemented, would result in one of two unintended consequences. The first is we fold. I hope the evidence provided to you tonight, here in this document, in my brief presentation, we just have a couple other members that would like just a couple minutes of your time. I hope that this evidence properly frames the reasons why NCSC could not survive under staff's proposed fee increases. The other potential outcome for us, the other unintended consequence, and one that I will be recommending as president to the board of directors, would be for us to reduce our lane use from three lanes to one. Is this ideal? Hardly. Our athletes have worked too hard, and they're here tonight because the parents are here. They came after practice and we got together so that our kids could get home safely and get their parents and be reunited. We feel that the value of a competitive swim club is too great to be lost. So we're going to do everything that we can to avoid ceasing operations. Our single lane would be reserved for our novice swimmers, the bronze group. Our more advanced swimmers would just be integrated into the other five lanes. Our advanced swimmers would likely swim longer sets with less direction from the coaching staff, sort of on their own. And when our bronze swimmers aren't in the water, then our silver and gold group, our more advanced swimmers, would have an opportunity to work on their starts and turns and do a little bit of the technical training that they need to be competitive. On behalf of the NCSC Board of Directors, on behalf of our membership, our corporate sponsors, I ask you to please consider the guaranteed revenue stream that NCSC provides to the city, as well as the many other important considerations presented here tonight, and please do not impose staff's recommended fee increases. We are a solutions-oriented group. We have brainstormed a half a dozen ideas, a flat fee, a guaranteed number of swimmers. I mean, we are open to any ideas you might have. We learned of this 30% increase to our budget literally 6 days ago. So we're scrambling. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Patrick, I have a few questions for you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Mayor? So you were on the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Parks Master Plan. I don't know if you've had a chance to think about how this proposed fee structure relates to the Parks Master Plan. But do you have any thoughts on that, any interpretation?
Sure. You know, frankly, and thank you for your question, I believe users, existing ratepayers that use all of the city's facilities end up picking up the slack because the city of Astoria lacks system development charges. I know SDCs are specifically for capital improvement projects. They can only go to new facilities, but I would offer in regards to parks, and we learned this through the committee and Angela's good work and Ian's good work, there are a lot of inefficiencies in the parks program. So one of the things that stood out to me, Zeddy, was our facilities are aging. Of course, the users have to pay their fair share. But the inefficiencies that are inherent to the city's park program shouldn't be borne by existing users. And I feel that there are some important policy considerations, you know, for the city to make in that regard. I guess that might be one thought that I have.
Okay, and in the option that you mentioned, the option that you don't want to do, but the option that you pointed out, number two, reducing lane usage from 3 to 1, how many people are usually swimming in one lane at a time when you guys have the three lanes? I mean, it's quite a bit, right?
Yeah, we went about a year without a head coach. It's not easy to find a qualified head coach. There's multiple certifications involved. We went about 12 months without a head coach, but we did have, you know, one of your staff, Sarah Shepherd, stepped up. We had folks in the community that stepped up, got certified, and helped us bridge. 4 to 6 swimmers. And as a land use planner, I would offer that's very compact and efficient. our swimmers rarely get a lane to themselves, much less split a lane. You know, we have, I believe our treasurer reported to me today that we have 19 billable swimmers and we have 3 swim groups. So, you know, 19 divided by 3, 6 in each group. So we'll split one of those groups up. So, you know, 4 to 6 swimmers. Of course, kids are doing other things. So, you know, maybe on average 4 swimmers right now. In the past, you've probably seen us with more than that. But I feel as a parent, any more than 6, I don't like to see any more than 6. But, you know, I rely on our head coach to make those calls. But, you know, at times there'll be more than that. But right now about 4 to 6.
Thank you. I don't like to share a lane with more than one person. Thank you.
Well, one of the first things we do is teach our kids to circle swim. They absolutely have to learn how to circle swim.
They're good at it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Hi, Patrick. You said that you made a couple of other recommendations about what you could do. Would you like to share those with us?
We've had a couple of brainstorming sessions of we could offer a guaranteed minimum number of swimmers, say 20. If we have less than that, we'll cut you a check every month. Charge us a flat fee instead of the current monthly pass and or the lane rental, or forego the monthly pass and make us pay a lane rental. It's just all three of those is just too much. We're open, Councillor Price. We are here to talk business. You know, we feel that we pay our fair share. We are an experienced, seasoned fundraising group. We have a pretty sophisticated swim club. I'm honored to be the president, quite frankly. I work with some absolutely fantastic families. We'll do whatever it takes, but if you look at our numbers, you know, it costs a couple grand per year for a swimmer to swim. But, you know, I know you're running a heavy subsidy. City of Newport runs a $260,000 subsidy. They expect that subsidy to continue with their new aquatic center. You know, as we know, libraries, transit districts, I mean, there are certain things that offer a quality of life that it's difficult to quantify, and we would offer that having a competitive swim club falls right in line with that, as well as parks goals and city council goals as we've reviewed them lately.
I have a question. If you rent one lane, and there are other lanes open, can your swimmers use those other lanes without your paying for those?
Well, we would just simply be a lap swimmer with our monthly pass at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We would swim like anybody else has the right to come in and swim. Like I said, there'd be much less direction from our coaching staff. You know, kids can't sit at the end of the lane, wait for direction from the coach. They really can't do speed intervals where you like to have them do, you know, 6:50s on a minute and then have some nice rest. It would have to be more of just a aerobic type of exercise. Not ideal. Swimmers need anaerobic training, and we wouldn't be able to do that, but they would need to swim as if any other lap swimmer swims. It would limit us. I mean, it'd be tough. But to make the club survive, that's, I guess, my highest option at this point, if you were to move forward with any fee increase.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or want some other people to come forward? Jeff?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
I'm Jeff Smith at 534 Duane Street, and I'm speaking to you this evening as a proud parent of an NCSC swimmer and a resident of Astoria. Astoria, without a doubt, is a maritime community with a heritage of living and working on and near the water. The ability to swim is a life-saving skill and an activity with lifelong benefits. The North Coast Swim Club, a 501c3 nonprofit, has been an integral part of a vital swim culture here in Astoria for over 40 years, as Patrick said. We see our role with the city as being a partnership through which opportunities to learn and develop skills as a swimmer are provided for the benefit of the community we both serve. Our daughter, who is 14 now, learned to swim at the Astoria Aquatic Center by going through the program of lessons offered, Guppy through Killer Whale. I think that's what they called them back then. I'm not sure what it is now. Her instructors were lifeguards here at the center, and many happened to be members of the NCSC. Through those instructors, she developed the skills to be a confident swimmer, and they opened up a world of recreation that she previously couldn't know or participate in. When she had reached the killer whale level and graduated, she was noticed one day by Tim Larkin, who was then head coach of NCSC and working as a lifeguard for the pool part-time. He suggested to us, her parents, that she might want to consider joining the swim club to further develop her skills as a swimmer. She did, and little did we know that over 5 years later, she would still be swimming competitively. Many of our swimmers have qualified to represent our community at state and regional level competitions over the years. Tim, by the way, is currently coaching for one of the most accomplished teams in the state and was this year nominated for Age Group Coach of the Year by USA Swimming, our parent organization, which includes our nation's Olympic swim team. As we approach the 20-year mark this December for the groundbreaking of this facility, I share this to show that what we have here is a real treasure, a legacy. Our NCSC swimmers are deeply committed to the sport of competitive swimming and appreciate the opportunity they have to train in such a fine facility. Many intend to swim competitively for Astoria High School in the near future, and also have shown an interest in applying to work as lifeguards and instructors at AAC when they are old enough. Our swimmers have traveled around the state and have seen firsthand how favorably AAC compares with other pools. At our most recent hosted home meet this last August, we had over 100 visiting swimmers and their families here in town for 2 days. I volunteer as the announcer for our home meets, and people were coming up to me to express how impressed they were with our facility and what a positive experience they had while visiting Astoria. I think that's a credit to our staff here at the Aquatic Center. Many said it was the finest on the coast by far. That kind of reputation is what we all strive to achieve. 2 years ago, we had as many as 50 swimmers on our team. Today, we have 19 and are in a rebuilding phase. Even so, you heard how much our current membership contributes annually to the bottom line of this facility. As the club continues to grow, now that we have secured certified professional coaches with a long-term view, our contribution will increase proportionately with the additional access passes. I also want to point out that many of our swimmers hold not just individual passes, but family-level passes in many cases. This is all part of that vital swim culture that I referred to at the beginning. Please let us try to find a compromise that will allow both the AAC and NCSC to thrive and fulfill their mutual missions. The fee proposal put before you this evening does not make that possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Well, I'm curious how many swimmers are here in the room tonight.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else?
Yeah.
Susan. Mayor Lemire, city councilors, my name is Scott McMullen, 864 Irving Street, Astoria. I'm not part of the swim group. I don't have a child in swimming now. I did have two boys that swam when they were in high school. And I, when I heard about this on the radio this morning, my first thought was, well, if they lower the price for the swimmer, the youth swimmers, probably gonna be people like me that buy their monthly passes are gonna end up absorbing the additional costs, and they'll get eventually passed down to me. So I had a little apprehension, to be honest, but when I really thought about it, this is a program that is just fantastic. I came from the pool, not knowing these folks would be here, but swim alongside these kids. And these kids are good kids. They're in an activity. It takes all the spit and vinegar out of them. I'm sure when they go home, they do their homework and go to bed. They're not out doing anything else because they work hard, especially that little guy right there. He can really goes fast. But I can just say that sharing lanes with these swimmers, it's embarrassing enough when you're lane beside them, but it wouldn't work for them to swim alongside some of us that swim in the evenings after work. So I would just like to say I urge the support. I think the ability for kids to swim is an extremely valuable thing to learn, and especially in our area where we live on the water, near the ocean, near the river. It couldn't be a better thing to have our kids do than to encourage them and make it easy for parents to have their kids good swimmers. So I just say I support them.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
I'm Jennifer Rawls. We live in Coast Guard Housing, 950 Alameda Avenue. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of NCSC. We obviously are a Coast Guard family who recently relocated to Astoria from the Houston area in Texas. First, I have to tell you how grateful we are to have been so warmly received by the community in Astoria. As our first move as a Coast Guard family, it has been the easier beyond my imagination. Didn't think it was going to be this well. When we learned of my husband's promotion to chief and our change of orders to Astoria in May, we immediately began researching the area. Once we got here, we fell in love with the small town feel and the sense of community, but we were concerned with the extracurricular opportunities that the kids would have. Whereas Aiden, who is my 11-year-old son, would have loved to continue his Taekwondo, the quality of instruction here was not nearly the same as we had in Texas. The same is true of gymnastics for my daughter Mackenzie, who is 8. Frankly, there are no opportunities here, and we would have to drive to Portland if we wanted those same opportunities. As the saying goes, where one door closes, another one opens. And as we discussed our extracurricular concerns with members of our new community, we were invited to try the swim team by our church pastor's family. As former swimmers ourselves, my husband and I jumped at the opportunity because of the valuable experiences we had growing up and still apply today. Our swim team experiences taught us that through hard work, the goals that we set for ourselves can be met and exceeded. This is probably the single most important thing my kids can be taught. Hard work achieves goals. In addition, Aiden and Mackenzie are being taught the importance of an individual's success to the team, and that cheering on a teammate to do their best helps the team as well. After just one practice, we could tell that this was the opportunity we were looking for. It not only met our criteria of a positive environment, but it also focused on the skill of swimming and the development of the child personally and socially. It also met the reasonable financial requirement portion of our decision-making process. Aiden and Mackenzie's participation in NCSC has increased their self-confidence, not only in swimming, but also socially, translating into a smooth transition into our new community home. I'm extremely thankful to NCSC and very excited to see how Aiden and Mackenzie will continue to flourish. Because of the great start in our new community afforded to us by NCSC, I have a new confidence as we move forward in Aiden McKenzie's ability to relate to and connect with people wherever our next duty station may take us. Because as we all know, the older they get, the harder it is to move. So please, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
Good evening, I'm Sonora Cameron. I'm 36359 River Point Drive, Astoria. Over the past 7 years, all three of my children have swam for North Coast Swim Club. When we began 7 years ago, it was right at the start of, I think, what Ms. Cosby was kind of glossed over, where they had just changed their fee structure. Previously, the team had paid a rental fee for the lanes, and everyone was talking about this new structure. They had made an agreement with the pool where now we would all be required to have a season pass, and in lieu of paying for the lane fees. And so that's how it has been for the past 7 years. Before that, I don't know the whole 40-year history, but I know at least directly before that was just paying for the lane fee and not needing an individual swimmer's monthly or seasonal pass. So that's how it's been the last 7 years. At the time when I began, I also noticed there was quite a need on our team. There were several families that were low-income swimmers that were facing the possibility of not being able to swim anymore because of financial burden. So I began seeking out and started a scholarship fund that was mainly funded by the Madeline Malia Robbins Memorial Fund. So we have worked very hard to make sure that all the swimmers that wanted to were able to swim. I get so emotional. over the last 7 years.
I just feel that this fee increase will disproportionately affect the very low-income swimmers, which would just be like such a disgrace.
That's okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, anyone else? Okay, council comments?
I have a question. With the high school swim team, do the students have to have annual passes?
Yes, they do. Or individual, or buy an individual ticket or pass to get in.
Okay.
But in the case of the high school, then I assume the school, it's the school will pay the extra fee, the lane fees?
Yes. This has been negotiated with Howard Group, the athletic director. Mm-hmm. And Howard shared with me in past years and this year that since swimming is these athletes' main sport, they already have memberships to do that. So he doesn't consider it necessarily an additional fee that the school has to pay. He says there's very few children or very few students that don't already have a swim pass that then the school has to pay for. But yes, they do. And the children then who can't afford it also can apply for the scholarship.
Well, the city coordinates youth sports, baseball, basketball, and I learned on the Citizen Advisory Committee for the Parks Master Plan that youth sports is one of the biggest money losers for the city in terms of cost versus revenue. And here we have a great example of citizens who have formed a nonprofit group who are some of our best customers at the Aquatic Center. And so I don't see any reason why it's fair to start charging lane rental fees for North Coast Swim Club. Parks and Recreation needs to patch up its sinking ship. This is not the way to do it.
Anyone else?
I might just agree with that. It's new information to us here to the problem that the North Coast Swim Club has with the additional fees, and then of course I'm just sitting here doing the math, and it's clearly it's if it is $9,000 a year, that's an extra $38 a month to parents who are already paying quite a bit. You could cut that in half; it would be $18. But we just don't know at this point really what the breaking point is for parents. Clearly, some are managing just barely as is, and I take Councillor Nimmo-Wells' comment quite seriously. She has children. She spends a lot of time at the Aquatic Center. It's not something that I'm that familiar with. I just don't feel able to make any sort of negotiated fee here tonight. I would just take Councillor Nimmo-Wells' comment and go with that.
Well, I have to agree with Councilman Nimmo-Well. This might be just one of those things, like many of the youth sports, that continues to be a money loser. I think it's important that it is offered. If the North Coast Swim Club can't afford it, and they only had 6 days' notice, at least I think we should kick it down the road a ways. But I'd have a tough time personally voting for it right now.
Okay, thank you. Patrick, I really appreciate this. That's very helpful. And the fact that the North Coast Swim Club already pays approximately what Newport Swim Club in their new facility will be paying. It seems to me that adding anything to that is excessive. I would wonder, though, if it would be worth I mean, we know the pool is losing money, and we've got to figure out some way to staunch that. But if possibly, if we decide that we're not going to change this fee schedule, if we could work with, maybe one of you could go and present this to the foundation, Parks Foundation, and see if that can be changed, that funding can be used for lanes or whatever, and perhaps they would be able to subsidize then. I don't know. Is that a possibility, Angela?
I can bring it forward to the foundation at their next meeting and see if they're interested in it.
I mean, at least that would, you know, I mean, they want to help the parks in any way they can, and this is certainly a way where they could do that.
And Mayor and Council, I would note that we are going to need to change the fee schedule, because presently the fee schedule states that they would be charged $25 per lane per hour. That's what the city staff does not have the ability, and the city attorney has noted that the city staff does not have the legal ability to waive fees. So we are going to need to...
Did we vote on that?
Yes.
We did, okay. Whoa.
So that is, and so that's the fee that's in place right now. There were agreements from prior parks directors that put this in place. Ms. Cosby is trying to bring a fee schedule which is in compliance with city code and law before the city council. So we will need to bring something back to you as to whether or not $5 is low enough. You know, we'll need to still bring something back to you, because we do not, and Angela does not have the legal authority to waive fees.
Okay. Would this, if we decided not to charge any fees for, I mean, if we kept it the way it is right now, I thought they weren't paying anything now.
That's correct, and it's in violation of city code.
Okay.
How long has that been going on?
Ms. Cosby?
7 years.
Okay. The only thing I wonder about is this setting a precedent. If we say one group doesn't have to pay and another group does,
you would be losing revenue, more revenue than we are right now, yes.
Let me clarify, Mayor Angela, if you could clarify the different groups which utilize the lanes at this point in time.
Absolutely. This, the fee proposal was written specifically for youth swim teams. As North Coast Swim Club and Astoria High School swim team are our largest customers of lane rentals. There are other groups that do rent lanes, the Coast Guard, as well as, say, diving schools in town, people wanting to kayak and learn how to roll. There's a good amount of groups who do rent lanes at the Aquatic Center. This was an attempt trying to not charge that high rate of $25 per hour that those other groups do pay, and implement something much lower and more affordable for the swim teams. With Astoria High School paying lane rental fees in the past, in addition to monthly or daily passes and rates for swim meets, much like North Coast Swim Club does, we would be losing that revenue that we have received in past years for this year if we implemented something that was equal.
Do you think there would be antagonism on the part of the high school if the North Coast Swim Club paid nothing and the high school had to pay $10 an hour?
I don't think I can speak for them. If I were in their position, I probably wouldn't be very happy about it, but I can't speak for them.
Somebody in the audience has their hand up.
Okay.
Can I just clarify something that makes us different from those other groups?
Mm-hmm.
The college, the high school, and the Coast Guard are identified, as well as we are, as community
partners with the in your master plan or in the city's master plan. The difference is we are a parent-run organization, so the cost is fully borne by the parents. We don't have a high school budget. We don't have a government budget. We don't have a college budget to pull from. It is solely the parents paying for everything. And that's how we're different. And personally, I would like to see the high school in the same position we are. I would like to see them not have to pay for those lanes either if they're having to buy passes as well. I didn't feel like it was clear. Angela said that Howard indicated that most of their swimmers already have passes. That's different than being told you have to buy a pass. So are they all paying for passes or not?
Yes.
I'm not clear.
And he's saying your swimmers will have to buy passes. The response in general is that's not a problem. Most of my swimmers already have passes.
So maybe ask the council question to get clarification. Is it your desire to have organizations such as NCSC and also the high school swim team to have even further reduced rates below just those two groups, below what was proposed, the $5? And if so, we can go back and work with the two organizations and bring something back to you, if that's your desire.
Well, I think that the $10 an hour is part of the high school budget. Parents aren't burdened with that directly, as the nice lady here said, where with this they are. So this group is a little different from a per person out of pocket expense than members of the high school team. And so I don't think that it's necessarily should be the same or the same consideration
between the high school and
yeah,
NCSC.
Correct.
And I'm seeing nods from Councilor Price.
Yeah, I agree.
Are there other nonprofit groups that are users of the pool in terms of lane rentals?
That's not a nonprofit.
Yes, they are.
Group.
Yes, they are.
Well, I guess it is.
Yeah. We're really talking about youth sports.
Yes, and that's how, and that's why we've differentiated youth from the others for these two. But what I'm hearing is some direction from council they'd like to have further differentiation on the youth category.
Indeed.
My feeling is that the North Coast Swim Club currently is paying $100. The Newport Swim Club and their new facility will pay $101. I think that's enough. I know cities have to subsidize pools, but I don't think it should be on the back of these parents.
Okay. What I will say is that we are going to be having many tough discussions like this coming up over the next few months, where the entire parks department cannot function under the existing subsidy. And unless additional revenue is generated, we are going to have to do significant cuts to our parks department.
I think, though, that the North Coast Swim Club, given that everybody that's in the pool has a pool pass, makes these users very good customers as it is. And having 4 to 6 swimmers in a lane is much more efficient than typical swimmers. Usually one swimmer is in a lane. Sometimes two swimmers are in a lane, but never 4 to 6 swimmers in a lane. That's just the swim club. And so, you know, I think the fact that, we're getting the revenue from having these users purchase annual passes is very positive for Astoria Parks and Rec. And, you know, I think our Parks Director, Ms. Cosby, is just trying to do her job, and it's a really tough job. If there is an option, an agreement that we could come to, and I don't know what that is tonight, but it sounds like North Coast Swim Club is willing to work with the city. We need to find a solution that isn't going to increase their fees by 30 to 60%, because, as Patrick Wingard mentioned, that could cause this wonderful organization to fold. And this organization is Parks and Rec at its best, to provide increased livability and wellness for the community. I mean, it really meets our mission, and it provides revenue. It's not a money loser. So we need to come to some sort of an agreement. It sounds like this is not this option isn't going to work.
Okay. So we'll go back and we'll work with the North Coast Swim Club, but also look for a fee structure that would provide a youth discount for the Astoria High School swim team, and then a separate rate structure for parent-led organizations such as NCSC. Is what I'm
so we're talking about going from 25 to 10 for the high school,
or some we will be discussing, we'll have subsequent discussions with the high school, but also subsequent discussions with NCSC, but understanding that NCSC would have a further discounted rate below what would be provided to Astoria High School
and
students.
I see Councilor Henningsgaard wants to say something, but just also to add another dimension to this. You know, Mr. Wingard said that the North Coast Swim Club is in a rebuilding phase right now. So you have a smaller number of youth than you have had in the past. You're at, what, 19 now, and you've had up to 50. So, I mean, you could also think of categories within categories where you have, you know, if you're under 30 or 35. Because theoretically, if you were up to 50 again, then you could afford a fee. Because you would be getting, you know, you would have that many more in the pool. But that's, you know, that's just something else to add later. But Councilman Henningsgaard.
I was just going to suggest that perhaps you might just want to declare a moratorium on the fee for the North Coast Swim Club for, say, 30 days, and give folks a chance to figure out a structure that might work. And that way, you get the Parks Department out of this potentially illegality to not charge them.
And Mr. Henningsgaard, I think it would also be for the Astoria School District as well, because right now they're not paying. So, if there's going to be a moratorium declared for 30 days, staff would request it be for both organizations until we get something in place.
Is 30 days long enough?
Angela?
So I'm not sure between North Coast Swim Club's board and Parks and Recreation Department staff schedule, 60 days would probably allow us a bit more time to work on things.
Yeah. 60 days?
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a motion that we declare a moratorium on the fees for 60 days and revisit it then?
Thank you.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Hey, I'm out of it now.
But this is, you know, democracy at work. So vote tomorrow.
Yeah.
Kick it
Thank
down
you.
The road.
Thank you, all of those of you who came to speak on this issue. It is a very important issue, and we do appreciate the swim team.
Now go home.
Okay, we'll let you, unless you really want to stay and listen to all the rest of our business, we...
I'm interested in the next agenda item.
Okay. Okay, the next item then, item C, 6C, is Aquatic Center Use Agreement between Tongue Point Job Corps Center and the City of Astoria.
This is another agreement that is between the City of Astoria and Tongue Point Job Corps Center to be able to provide a fee structure which would allow for the Tongue Point students to come in, use their Job Corps pass to be able to access the Aquatic Center, and then with our new software program for our Aquatic Center, allow for quarterly billing back to the Job Corps Center at the youth rate. And Angela, I don't know if you would like to be able to provide any additional detail on that matter.
Necessarily. I'm happy to answer any questions. I think it's pretty straightforward. At some point, students would be able to use the center without charge. In return, the Chunk Point Job Corps Center, the organization, would be paying their rate on a quarterly basis at a slightly lower rate, at the youth drop-in rate of $5.50 per hour right now, versus the majority of students out there are over the age of 17 versus the adult rate. In turn, we see it being a positive financial impact for the Aquatic Center, because the students at Chunk Point Job Corps Center typically don't have the means to be able to use the Aquatic Center out there. Mm-hmm.
Isn't this a very similar agreement to what we did with the City of Long Beach?
Yes.
Or not the City of Long Beach, the...
Older Trust.
So tonight it's recommended the council authorize the pool use agreement with Tongue Point Job Corps.
So moved.
Oh, thank you. It has been moved. Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great.
That was easy.
Yeah, I like that. Have you got any other easy ones for us? item 6D, consultant services for a library roof replacement.
So in February this year, staff secured a report provided by McBride Architecture for an evaluation of the library roof. And the findings from that report suggested an overwhelming need to replace the roof of the library building. Council approved $280,000 for roof replacement in the current budget. The our new library director, in consultation with our public works director, received a proposal from McBride for the management of the project. And this was done in that if we were going to move forward with replacing the roof this budget year, we need to have construction documents prepared and be preparing the bid documents to send out after the beginning of the year. So after this agenda item started moving forward, I received some questions from the council or from some counselors about the timing of this project. And some of them dealt with the concerns of installing skylights later as a part of a subsequent remodel with a relatively new roof. Should we move forward with that project now? And some other questions dealing with the timing of the new roof, specific of when a time frame has not been set for a remodel of this building. We then communicated with the architect on this project about some of these questions, and as it was expected, it's preferred that if new skylights are to be installed as a part of the library remodel, it makes more sense to do it as a part of the re-roofing project. If we were to install skylights now, we really don't have a plan as to where they should be appropriately placed, so the timing of doing that now is not timely. We communicated to the architect that a plan would need to be developed to possibly remodel the building, and while an exact time frame has not been established by City Council at this point, we asked, would the roof be able to last for another 1 to 3 years? And we asked him his opinion on what he thought about that. He stated that it could possibly last for 1 to 3 years if there were frequent and ongoing inspections and if there were additional sealants added along the way, and that there would need to be sealants added at some seams to be able to prevent some of the larger leaks that we had in the past. In light of the fact that council has determined they wish to look at remodeling the building and that skylights may be added and that the roof could potentially last for another 1 to 3 years with these additional sealants and inspections, staff, including the library director and myself, would not have concerns if this project were postponed at this point in time. We understand that this is going to have to be monitored. We're going to have quite a bit of additional eyes on the roof to make sure the drains are clear, looking for potential leaks along the way, and potentially spending some money in smaller amounts to make sure that everything is sealed correctly. Because of that, you know, we feel comfortable if this project would not move forward, but we are bringing this forward to you tonight, and that this was a budgeted item that had some council discussion to be able to have the dialogue from the city council how to move forward.
The seal coat, that would be a professional spray-on seal that you're talking about?
Right, and it wouldn't be for the entire roof, but at certain joints where there's flashing up against the where there's, what we have now is some seals against some flashing, which is breaking loose. Water is getting, penetrating between the top roof.
Is there movement in the flashing, or is it?
I don't. There's
cracking in the existing. The age of the roof is unknown, and so this is just wear over the lifetime of the roof.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is I've got a flat roof building that the roof is probably 35 or 40 years old, and I have it professionally resealed every 3 or 4 years, and it's, you know, it's much less than a new roof, but it's keeps us dry.
Well, I appreciate staff's reconsideration of this. I think it makes all kinds of sense. It's not only skylights. I mean, the renovation will require new mechanicals. They generally go on a roof. Sometimes you want them to be disguised in some way. There would be all kinds of perhaps walking on the roof. Skylights hopefully will be more than just bubbles. They could have some architectural interest to them. So who knows? We don't have a plan. We did make a decision at the end of July, I believe, to ask staff to come back with us for a plan that doesn't include a taxpayer bond. And I'm looking forward to that right after the first of the year.
Kate? I'm also eager for us to move on a library remodel. I think it's long overdue. And I don't think that it would make sense to start on a roof project right now without a full remodel plan, because that could cost us more in the long run if we have to make modifications to our new roof because it doesn't fit into the design.
It sounds like we have a consensus here. Do we need a vote of any kind, or do we just...
I think it'd be good to have something, since this is a budgeted item, to be able to have a definitive decision made by the city council.
Okay.
That way we know the official direction of council in addressing budget.
Mr. Estes, can you provide an update on where staff is at right now since our vote in July? Sure. Is it that you said, Councilor Price?
Yes.
July. You know, I understood we were waiting for our new library director, who is here now, which is great for the library. What's our next move? What are you thinking from a staff level?
Sure.
To remodel the library?
So our new library director has been on board for a little over 3 weeks now. He's getting his feet wet and in the process of filling a vacancy within our library staff. And we're hoping that vacancy will be filled by year's end. At the same time, what Mr. Pearson is doing now is getting up to speed on all of the documentation, which has been developed over time. He's gathering all the, reviewing all the details to be able to understand what has been discussed by the city council. And we are going to be coming back to the council after the beginning of the year with I'm going to call it a budget proposal, which takes a look at monies which are in hand, with the city of Astoria within our different funds, put together amount that, in working with the foundation, as to what they feel that they could bring to the project, And also, there's been some discussion about what is the appropriate timeline? How fast does the city council want to see this happen? I mean, how long of a fundraising period does the council want to be able to have? And be able to get that level of concurrence with the city council, and then start moving forward with looking at design services. The first thing is really to determine what does the council feel is appropriate as a budget amount, and also a time frame for fundraising. If this is something that we are just going to move forward with in the first year, there won't be much time to put together grants. But if there's going to be a little bit more time, maybe 2 to 3 years, is that something the council wants to be able to see happen, to be able to allow our foundation and also staff to put together grant possibilities to add resources to the budget?
Okay, so just to be clear, you're not waiting for us to come up with a timeline first.
No,
we're waiting for you to do a little bit of research and come up with the funds
back
that are available.
Right.
And so we're waiting for you to make the
next. Yes, the ball is in staff's court, correct.
Thank you.
Okay, could we have a motion then that we authorize a contract to repair the roof of the library?
Well, I would make a motion that that's not really what we want to do. What we want to do, I think, is to make a motion that a new roof will come with the, will be attached to the proposal for renovation. You're not asking for a contract for...
No. If the council's direction is to hold off on re-roofing the library, right. I think just a motion to be able to say we will look at re-roofing the building along with
an architectural plan for
full renovation, correct.
Yeah. Okay. Could we have a motion to that effect then?
I've made that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And may I just say, I too am anxious to get going, and I really am kind of surprised to hear that we're waiting, because I thought that we had seen that information. We've had a couple of budget presentations, and the last one did include, we looked, we saw what was available, we talked about what was available sort of right now, and you could look forward to see what might be available in a year. But I'm surprised to hear that it could be another 2 to 3 years. I really would like to see us get going.
Well, I think it comes down to how much time when you kick off a project. The senior center project, from receiving the grant till finalized product, was 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I understand. It's just that we have been talking about this. This has much longer than I've been on the council, and we had a very robust discussion over a period of about 2 years, really. And so we know what we have now. And when we made the motion for staff to come back with a proposal that does not include taxpayer bond, I realized that there was a lot of room for maneuvering there. But I will just say that in my mind, that meant that to proceed in the way that staff usually proceeds once we make a decision, which is like within 3 to 4 months, we have a proposal in front of us for an RFP. We're told that we have this amount of money. Architectural... And that we might have another. So you sent, anyway, I'm getting a little windy here, but we would have between, say, 2 to 3.5, $4 million over a period of a year to get going. And architects can start with that.
Okay, I mean, so.
But if you're asking, but it seems now you're asking for us to say that we want to put a timeline on this.
No, I'm actually, what I will be asking is, I've heard from various perspectives on the city council that there are Some counselors would like to be able to move forward with the funds that we have in place presently under budget, but there are other counselors that would like the opportunity to be able to look at a fundraising opportunity to be able to extend those funds. And so I will be looking for direction from the full city council as to what would you like to be able to do.
Well, I'd like us to have that discussion, I mean, not tonight because it's late already, but sooner rather than later. Because if we wait until January or February to have that discussion, then it's another X number of months before an RFP comes back, and or it, you know, let's get that discussion, let's get that made if there's a conflict on the council about that. Let's clarify that as soon as we can. That's what I would like. Anyway.
Okay. So we voted to...
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Anyone out in the audience want to make any comments? Okay. This meeting is adjourned, and we will recess into executive session. Okay, I'll recess.
So the first agenda item, by the way, we'll do the performance evaluation as number two.
We'll call it to order. Let's make one motion.
Yeah, I want to make sure I know what motion we're making, though. Is the motion...
I think the motion is that we authorize the city attorney to file papers for judgment against.
Okay. Do we need to say the person's name?
Is that correct, Mr. Attorney?
Yes.
Yes, you would need.
Okay. We are now back from executive session.
Regular session.
You're back in regular session.
Yeah, but back from executive session.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said we're back in executive.
Okay. And we need a motion to...
I move that we direct our attorney to file the paperwork to secure a judgment against Brad Smithart.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Meeting is adjourned.